right, welcome back to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. We've got Jays tickets to give away to see the Jays and Angels on July 6th. What was that about?
I had to adjust.
For those of you who are on the radio, he's adjusting the microphone.
Oh, thanks for clearing that up.
Well, I mean, you've got to. You know, there's a lot of sensitive people out there, and sometimes they tune into the show, and sometimes they mistake some of the things we say.
You say.
Most often, it's something I say, but sometimes they like Deep Throat, for example.
I have no idea what that means. That's some kind of movie or something, right?
Yes, it is a movie, and I'm sure you've probably seen it.
I wasn't born yet.
No, you just don't know that you've
seen
it.
That's one of those phones you had that you had to roll.
No.
Emma, can you get me the
those types of movies
Blairs?
All run together? anyhow, he is the co-host of the Starkville podcast. He is also with The Athletic and the MLB
He's
Network.
He's the best.
He is the best. He is Jason Stark. How do you say hello in Italian? Arrivederci, or is that goodbye?
I think that's goodbye.
Oh, buongiorno.
That's it.
Buongiorno. Oh. If it's the afternoon, it's buona sera.
There you go. So how was it?
A little ciao in there. In there when you're leaving.
Yeah, before we get to the... You were in Italy, were you not?
I was in Sardinia for most of my trip. And it is a spectacularly beautiful part of our planet.
Wow. When you left...
I'll tell you all about it, but you probably wouldn't talk about baseball.
Oh, I do. And when you left, Jason, as you were getting on the plane, did you think to yourself, man, I wonder if the Jays will be a game out of first place when I get back from Sardinia?
I bet you did.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought about. Maybe not the first.
No. So, here we go. The Mets lost 7-2 today to the Brewers. The Yankees are a game ahead of the Jays. Tampa Bay's breathing down their neck as well. What would be the biggest crisis? Let's say in 2 days' time, Mets continue what they're doing, or Yankees are in second place all of a sudden.
if the Yankees fall out of first, that'll do it. I don't think it's even close. I mean, there are a lot of Mets fans in New York, but nobody moves the needle like the Yankees when they're collapsing. You guys know that.
You focus on one team a lot of the times. Another team comes in. I was just surprised that, some of the bullpen issues they've had.
Defense.
In this game, never mind the catcher's interference, but plays not made by Jazz Chisholm. Like, I'm watching the game yesterday with Kevin, and I looked at him and I said, they can't, and I like Jazz Chisholm, but I said, they can't win a World Series with Jazz Chisholm at third base. I just don't think they can.
I mean, this was not the plan to play him at third base. They're really trying to cover for the fact that DJ LeMahieu just isn't good anymore, and they can't. They don't think they can play him there. But there are just too many guys on the field who shouldn't be playing where they're playing. And you guys haven't even mentioned the offense.
Yeah.
And I think the Jays have caught on to this. John Schneider's caught on to this. If you don't let Aaron Judge beat you, who in that lineup do you fear? I mean, Jazz maybe, the way he's swinging. Who else?
Nobody.
Bellinger.
I don't think so.
No. And you know what, Ed? We just had Joe Siddle on, and we made the point. I don't mind Aaron Judge scoring a run or two runs in a game. Just don't be driving in four. Like, I'll take Aaron Judge on base over Aaron Judge at the plate in a heartbeat.
Well, I know he's in scoring position when he's in the batter's box, but it is really amazing how John Schneider just doesn't even want to pitch to him when nobody's on base. Mm-hmm. We don't see that a lot, I know it happened to Barry Bonds, but it's amazing to me to still see this happening. People don't treat Vlad that way. Mm-hmm. I know Vladdy's not on the road to 60 homers, but Vladdy is so dangerous with men on base, and he gets pitched to. It's just the Aaron Judge versus everybody else factor in that lineup just jumps out at you, and I think that's what it's all about.
Jason, how big's the separation between the Yankees and the Tigers now, do you think?
Do you want me to say the Tigers are better?
Well, I think they're better, but how much better? I think that's the question.
Yeah. I really like the Tigers. The Tigers aren't a great team, but they, you know, they're one of those teams that are really a lot like the Rays, where they have so many good players. Their depth of good players is the difference between them and most teams, even the Yankees, with their payroll. And the depth of their rotation is a big difference between them and the Yankees. I love watching Tarek Skubal. Is there anybody, any pitcher, more fun to watch than that guy? He just has no fear of the bat. And the Yankees don't have anybody like that. Max Fried is great. He's not that.
Yeah, I think, I know everybody loves Paul Skenes, but, man, I love watching Tarek Skubal pitch, too. And Skenes is so electric, and the stuff is so great. There's something about Skubal, though, that even for me makes it a little...
Skenes is on an awful team, too.
That could be part of
it's
it, yeah.
It's an awful team. Organization's
yeah,
not great.
Yeah, that definitely skews the way we think of him. I still think this seems crazy to say for a guy who's I think his career ERA is under two, right?
Yeah.
But I still think Paul Skenes is figuring out what the best version of himself is, what the best version of his repertoire is. He fiddles with a lot of pitches, and Tarek Skubal, when he walks out there, he knows exactly how he's going to get you out.
Yeah.
And nobody crushes the strike zone like that guy. You just don't see 13 punch outs when under 100 pitches. Yeah. That's just a routine day at the office for him.
Yeah, that is remarkable. You had David Dombrowski on recently on Starkville.
Yeah.
I covered David when he was GM of the Expos. He went on to the Marlins. Obviously, people know his background. He went on to the Marlins as an expansion franchise GM. He's been with Boston. He's been with Detroit. He's been with Philly. But I think you probably have followed him or interviewed him. I'm sure you have more than I have. What do people know about David Dombrowski, Jason? Because he's been around for a long time. But what if there was something, if somebody said to you, what don't people know about him? What would you say?
Okay, there are a lot of things that I notice about Dave that I don't know if the rest of the world picks up on. His work ethic is one of those things. He just keeps doing it. He makes every trip. If he misses one, it's because he's going to see one of their minor league teams play. He is always present. There are a lot of modern GMs now who think it's okay to even take a couple of days off. It's okay to get to the park at 5:30. You know, it's okay to dial it back every once in a while just for the sake of quality of life. And I just can't believe how relentless Dave is. There are a lot of presidents of baseball ops who delegate everything. And Dave is the decision maker. He includes people. He listens to people. He drives people. But he's going to make the decisions. I had a GM say to me once, this was probably a couple years ago, he said, I figured something out at this trade deadline. If Sam Fold, who was the second in command at that point, if Sam Fold calls me, we're not going to make a deal. If Dave calls me, this is happening.
Yeah.
Okay, because Dave is the doer there. So there's all that. The other interesting thing, too, Jeff, is you hear people take little jabs at Dave because he's got this reputation that he doesn't care about his prospects and he only cares about stars. But I had a really interesting experience the last 2 years in spring training because I've been part of the Athletics GM survey, right, where we've asked GMs all over the sport, who do you think are the five best people in your business, your line of work at doing this? And so this spring I was talking to a GM who, because he nominated Dave Dombrowski as one of his five, and he said to me, anybody who would criticize Dave Dombrowski is just jealous of Dave Dombrowski. He's one of the best team builders who ever did this job.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's sort of my, again, my impression of him from a distance. And again, Montreal was his first. I know he was with Chicago before he came to Montreal, but Montreal, I think, was kind of his first big job.
Right.
And
in a World Series with four teams.
Yeah.
One with two of them, should have won in Detroit, could still win in Philly.
And you know what's amazing is he's done it in a league where there isn't a salary cap. Like there is a lot of I don't know if parity is the word. It's really hard to repeat in baseball. It's really hard to win multiple World Series in baseball, whether you're a manager and especially as a GM to do what he has done with the teams he's done it is remarkable. I mean, it really is.
He knows what a winning player looks like.
Yeah,
he does. And the other thing that has really stood out to me since he's been in Philadelphia is, again, people think of him as old school. They have one of the largest data departments,
mm-hmm.
Analytics departments of any team in the sport. And it's because he believes that all information is good information.
Yep.
So they didn't go fire all their pro scouts. They're still out there. He listens to them. He talks to them. He includes them. But he cares what the numbers say. He cares what the data says. He absorbs it all, and he uses it all to make good decisions. And, they're not a perfect team. I don't see any.
Mm-hmm.
But he's good at his job, man.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you what the feel is, because it seems to me like looking from or at that team from afar, they're missing something. I know the eighth inning guy, and they may need an extra swing and miss arm out of the bullpen, but it just seems to me like they're missing something else. Do you think that's the case? So they can win the National League. The Dodgers look like they're starting to do things, and Ohtani's starting to pitch again and dominate, and sort of the storyline throughout baseball. But what are they missing, Jason? They're missing one thing, for me anyway.
Well, you did touch on it, Kevin. They really need to upgrade the bullpen. There's not enough swing and miss in that bullpen. The Jays have way more swing and miss than the Phillies have. It's hard to judge their offense because Bryce Harper hasn't been part of it for almost a month, and he just came back. And I don't know how healthy he is or how healthy he's going to be, but he's a difference-making human. He's a team-changing human when he's right. And he hasn't really been right the whole year. If he comes back and he can play through this wrist thing, whatever the heck it is, and he becomes MVP Bryce, and Schwarber just keeps doing what he's doing, and Trey Turner has his best year since he got to Philadelphia, his best in probably 4 or 5 years, then the rest of the guys, there's not as much weight on them. The pieces of the lineup do not fit together the way they once did. And they're on pace to hit 50 fewer homers than they hit 2 years ago, which is a big issue. They don't catch the ball like some of these other great teams, but their pitching, starting pitching, is so good. It covers for everything. And I just think Bryce is one of the big X factors in the sport right now.
Yeah, he's a great player. Let me ask you this. Is the Cubs the third best team in baseball?
Let me think about this. So we've got Dodgers at number one.
Yeah.
Do you have
Tigers
at two?
I would think so, yeah.
The record says they're at two. I think once you get past Dodgers, there's like a little clump of Tigers, Phillies, Cubs, Astros. Hard to separate them. The Cubs can beat you a lot of ways. And, their pitching has been better than expected, and they're going to be really aggressive at the deadline. So it'll be a little easier to answer that, I think, in a few weeks. But that team's just got that thing about them. When you watch them, don't you feel it? They They just have the look. And I don't think we're delusional when I say that.
No, they look like a team that, first of all, knowing that they're going to be aggressive at the deadline, they look like a team that is dead set on having a really good year. Like, you can just tell watching them on TV. There's
the
a lot
chips
going
are
on.
In. Look what they gave up for Kyle Tucker for 1 year of Kyle Tucker.
Yep.
That tells you the chips have been pushed in. And so once you push them, you got to keep pushing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jason, we're going to let you run. Great to have you back, my friend.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
Love talking to you guys. Thanks.
See you later.
Thank you. Today.
Thanks. Thank you, man. That is Jason Stark of the Athletic, MLB Network, co-host of the Starkville podcast. The recent podcast, they had David Dombrowski. They talked a lot about the Cubs as well. The Dombrowski stuff is really fascinating. He was the first GM when I started covering baseball that I worked with. We had a little back and forth. He fired Buck Rogers as manager, and that was like one of the Buck Rogers was immensely popular in Montreal. David, quite frankly, had every right to do it, but it didn't go over well. But it's funny, you know, David Dombrowski is the only GM you will see in a press box on the road.
Yeah.
He will watch the game in the press box.
Yeah.
At least he does in Toronto. I also remember him, and he was the first GM. He had a locker in the Expos clubhouse.
Wow. That's a bit much, don't you think?
That was a bit much.
Yeah.
I think that's...
He doesn't do that now. He doesn't do that now.
But it was, a lot of that. And it's not like he was in there during... I mean, he had a locker there because he would go in and work out at like 9 in the morning
or
whatever.
That's
before
fine.
Anybody's
that's
there.
Okay.
But, I mean, he's still...
As long as he's not putting the uni on and taking batting practice with his team. That's a little weird.
He did not do that. But it was just he was very much he was very much around. And boy, you know, knowing Jason was coming on, I was just going back and kind of thinking about David Dombrowski. He really is one of the great sports executives of my lifetime. Not just baseball. To do it in the markets, he's done it in. To do it with expansion teams. He was a guy, Dan Duquette was working for David Dombrowski when the Expos started pumping that, bringing all those guys through the minor league system.
Mm-hmm.
David Dombrowski made the Mark Langston trade when he was Expos GM, trading Randy Johnson, Brian Holman, Gene Harris for Mark Langston to the Mariners. And that was when Charles Bronfman, the Expos owner, had basically said to David, like, let's take one more run at this and then I'm going to sell the team. Like, if you go back and look at the moves he's made, the things he's been involved in, he's been involved in some just huge, huge moves.
Yeah, you got to know who to give your money to. I think that's the biggest thing when you got those great executives, you know, that sort of separate themselves from everybody else. You got to know who to dump all your money into. And
you got to know what you got.
You
got
to really know real quick, right? Yep. You can't let it fester. And he's sort of a hired gun. Everywhere he goes, it's all about winning. It's nothing else other than winning, right? You got to win World Series no matter what. And it'll be intriguing to see how he handles this with the Phillies.
Yeah,
where are the Phillies? You know, are the Phillies close to the Dodgers? I don't know. Like, the Cubs are much better. There's other teams that are just as close to the Dodgers as the Phillies are.
Did you see the interview Bryce did the other day? It was like a Max Scherzer interview. It was essentially, this is going to be, you're going to have to keep checking with me every day as to whether I'm healthy.
Yeah, okay.
That would give me, and I'm not saying that as a negative. I'm just saying that was Bryce, Bryce is like, he's an honest guy.
Absolutely.
And
he can be honest, yeah.
And that gave me a little bit of concern because I've been in the Phillies. I think I had Phillies and Texas going to the World Series. Stupid World Series picks. I still think in a short series with Bryce Harper, I would still take the Phillies. I might even take them over the Dodgers just because.
I don't know. I mean, which rotation's better? Who can they not hit homers and win a World Series? Can they not hit homers and beat the Dodgers? That's the thing you got to ask yourself, right? It's a little all or nothing. It's kind of like the Yankees, right? I don't want to say get them on, get them over, get them in, but sort of against good pitching. What's good pitching do? They keep it in the yard a lot, and that's the biggest thing, and that's sort of what the Phillies went through the last couple of years is sort of being all or nothing with their lineup. That's why they move Schwarber where they move him in a lineup.
I'll tell you what, they still got the
not
one
leading him off.
They got the one starter as much as we've talked about Scooble. He got, man. For me, must-win game, Zach Wheeler.
That's fair. Like, it's just lefty-righty, pitching the weakness, pitching the strength, muscling through at bat, like going deep in games. Like, basically, you need 8 innings, scoreless baseball, I can give it to you.
He is maybe the closest thing to an old-school pitcher there is in baseball.
Hey, like, at you. I like that, too. Like, he'll do what he has to do to get you out.
Yeah, he's all about going 8 and winning.
Got a wind-up, which is rare.
Which is cool.
It is.
I still like the wind-up.
I do, too.
We've been giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Our last question and answer was, he's a 7-time All-Star who played 19 seasons in the majors and was named to the Hall of Fame. His best years came in the National League, where he starred with the Pirates and Reds and was named National League MVP. He played for both the Blue Jays and Angels in his final MLB season in 1991. Shame on me for not getting Dave Parker. Dave Parker was the Cobra. Just passed away recently. Mm-hmm. Loved watching Dave Parker play. That Pirates team, I was not a huge Pirates fan, but the Pirates team of him and Willie Stargell and all those guys.
He was a mean at bat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, he was, there was a time where he did not like you. There was a time in the 70s where there were a lot of those guys at bat that they did not like people. Dave Parker, the Cobra, tremendous player. And I was very embarrassed. I realized he played for the Jays in his final MLB season. I completely forgot about the
19
the,
years the a long Angels. Time too.
That is.
That's a long time.
That is a long time. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Angels at the Rogers Center on July 6th. And I've been using this guy as an answer for about the last 3 weeks, so I was really happy that Mark Boffo came through. This is my trivia. This is my answer to every trivia
every
question.
Every single one of them.
He's a 3-time All-Star and 3-time Gold Glove winner with the Blue Jays. He played exclusively in the American League for his entire career, including a stint with the Angels. The Blue Jays traded him away for 2 position players, one of which never played a game with the franchise. Again, today's question is to win tickets to see Jays and Angels at the Rogers Center on July 6th. He's a 3-time All-Star and 3-time Gold Glove winner with the Blue Jays. He played exclusively in the American League for his entire career, including a stint with the Angels. The Blue Jays traded him away for 2 position players, one of which never played a game with the franchise.
Yeah, you always say, if you can trade this contract, you can trade any contract. Yes. Isn't that what you say? You say that all the time.
Oh, it's true. We're giving it away, but it may be the most remarkable trade I have ever seen. And it just showed me. There is, between that and Wayne Gretzky, well, Gretzky wasn't a contractual issue. Once I saw that, I said, I am never, ever, ever going to say that a contract is untradeable.
Oh, that's fair.
Ever.
I've stuck to it. Yeah, you did.
I've stuck to it.
You have. You say it all the time. It's awesome.
Where there's a Wells, there's a way.
Oh good I one. Gave it away. Well, we are a show for the people.
We are a show for
we are.
Anyhow. Speaking of the people, Susan Waldman is a longtime voice of the New York Yankees. She is the best. She is in town along with Dave Sims, the call of the Yankees J series. That series continues tonight, 3rd game of the 4-game series at the Rogers Center. And we're very pleased that Susan Waldman will join us when we come back. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The stretch drive of Blair and Barker ahead of tonight's first pitch at the Rogers Center, 7:07. The Yankees and Blue Jays. The Jays looking to continue their recent run of success in a position to win the 3rd game in as many nights against the Yankees. Something I think it's safe to say that a lot of us are surprised that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Susan Waldman is one of the voices of the Yankees, and she joins us from the Rogers Center. Susan, great to talk to you again. It's always we always appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Well, of course. Hi, guys. By the way, you say you're a little surprised. You haven't been watching this Yankees team in a while then, have you?
Well, no, I haven't. But I also, you know, I always default to the Yankees are always better than I think they are.
Yeah.
I mean, I just do. I just do. You know, because there was one year where I thought that and that it didn't. So now I just assume that they are. Having said that, though, what's happening to them, or what's happened to them in recent weeks?
Okay, well, I think actually they're in this kind of, well, what do we call it, June swoon. They're in a little lull. Nobody's hitting, and it starts with the captain. And when Aaron Judge doesn't hit, it doesn't matter who is on the team. If Juan Soto, Ted Williams, anybody's on the team, if Aaron Judge does not hit, this team does not hit. And that's, it's been that way since he's walked in the door, and they can say whatever they want, and it doesn't seem to change. He seems to be coming out of it a lot. He goes through these things. Everybody goes through slumps. Aaron has a couple a year where he's 3-for-21, and then he turns it around. Also, you have a lot of things that are going on. You've got a guy who never played third base in his life till last year, playing third base, thinking he was going to play second base. Anthony Volpe and Jazz Chisholm were like twins during spring training because they were going to be the double play combination, and it was a good one, and Jazz's natural position is second. So you've got an infield that's kind of out of alignment. Meanwhile, that adds into Max Fried, who you signed for $1 billion, and you don't have a good infield. And this is a guy who gets balls through the left side. And if you don't have a great infield there, he's not going to be as effective. It's all kind of spiraling at the moment. They'll probably bounce out of it. I'm expecting someone to walk in the door trade deadline. I have a joke that I always say, is David Justice here yet? In 2000,
yes.
Remember 2000, yes. The team was dead in the water. They were dead in the water, and David Justice walked in the door. It was around this time, and everything changed. So I'm hoping that they are going to do something in the trade deadline because they really need to. They can't go through the whole year like this.
Susan, are you surprised that more teams or more managers don't treat Judge like John Snyder does?
Well, Ron Washington did. Washington would stand there with four fingers up and smile. I actually am. Aaron Boone, I think, is also a little little surprised. It's starting to be more, but I was surprised, guys, more when he was hitting. I mean, he'd hit a home run every day. I mean, he's got, what's he got now? He hasn't hit in one. He's got 30. So there was a time when every day he'd come up and there'd be somebody on and they pitched to him and it was always a mistake. I didn't get that group. Now that he's in a slump, I can sort of see it. Every time he came up, Ron Washington with a big smile on his face held up four fingers and somebody else did too. I can't remember who that was, but I asked Wash why he did that, and he said, because we just came from Cleveland, and I held up four fingers three times for Jose Ramirez, and the fourth time I let him pitch to him, and he hit one about 700 feet. So I am very surprised that more people aren't doing that.
Is this Yankees team better than last year or the same as last year?
I think it can be better. It started off that it was. I like teams. I don't like that your offense comes from two people. And I love Goldschmidt had a great start. He was out early about 2 o'clock. He's in a slump. He came out early today, was working really hard out there doing things. I like Goldschmidt. Bellinger is a joy both on and off the field. He's terrific wherever you put him. I like teams. I like things that go on instead of just waiting for Soto and Judge to hit home runs. I think they could be better. I think it's obviously Gerrit Cole is a humongous loss. Luis Gil, who was last year's Rookie of the Year, should be back late July, early August. So that's like making a trade for a frontline starter, I think. But if you keep Soto, and I know maybe that's your next question, if you keep Soto, Max Fried isn't here. And I would rather have Max Fried, to tell you the truth, than two guys that are the only offense you got.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was thinking about that watching Max Fried yesterday and just thinking,
tremendous.
If no Gerrit Cole, If they don't have Max Fried,
it's a disaster.
It is. It absolutely is. One thing that does seem to have turned around, though, at least from a distance, one person is Devin Williams. What explains that in your mind?
I don't know. I think he had to, and I hate to say it because everybody everybody, you know, if you ask the player, they won't admit it. I think New York really, I think he didn't know what he was getting himself into.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things that I heard him say in spring training when the media door opens is, there's a lot of you. I mean, and it's every day before and after. He's kind of a different kind of guy. He's not the kind of guy like a Luke Weaver who, well, not last night, but like who'll come in and before he got hurt was fastball, 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 you're gone.
Yeah.
And Luke Weaver had that job. So he came in and they took Luke Weaver out of that position, gave him the closer's role, and the first time he pitched, it took him 17 pitches before they started booing because he was walking people. He hit a guy. He's turned it around. It takes a while, and I think that once he said or he said he just has to get used to things here. The pitching coach has said his fastball isn't where it is now. It was, you know, much lower, so there was not a big change between the fastball and the change. And the people in Milwaukee said, you know, he's not Mariano. He's going to put people on. He'll get out of it, but that you have to get used to that. That's hard here. When you've had 17 years of, you know, let's get up ninth inning, let's go home. Let's get up Mariano and let's go home.
Yeah.
And Luke Weaver started to do that last year, and they moved Luke Weaver, and people didn't like it here. And then Weaver got hurt, and Williams seems to have turned it around. But he's an adventure. He's not, you know, he's not your 1-2-3 guy. He's an adventure.
Yeah, he's, he hasn't allowed a run in 18 of his last 20 outings.
Right. But he does put people on.
But he does put
people nervous.
Yeah. And I can't think, you know, any position in baseball, it's almost closing for the Yankees is you are automatically compared to Mariano. I mean, and I'm sure. Hey, I'm sure Anthony Volpe. I mean, you know, shortstop for the Yankees. Yeah. Who are people thinking of?
Yeah.
But there's still something about, you know, if you've had 16 years of perfection, it's hard to follow up with that, right?
17 years of perfection.
Yes.
And before that, that last in 96, don't forget, John Wetland was the closer.
Correct.
But Mariano pitched 7 and 8, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. And then you got to Wetland, who was an adventure in himself. But it's John Wetland, then Mariano for all those years, then David Robertson, who put men on, but he would joke about it. He said, you know, I put him on, I get him out. And he always did. So Yankees aren't used to this. Yankee fans aren't used to this, and they got a little nervous. And I think it's calmed down now, and I think he's fine. He seems to be. But, you know, it's when you're used to, when you grew up, just think there's whole generations that grew up knowing nothing but Mariano Rivera.
Susan, at the trade deadline, if the Yankees can address the issue at third base and if Jazz moves back to second, I mean, will that, in your mind, be enough to tighten things defensively for this team?
I don't know. I don't know. I would think it would, but there's other problems, too. This bullpen is on fumes, and they've got to do something. They've got to get some arms here. They made a move today. They brought up a kid named Clayton Beter who's been in the minor leagues, and they've got – and the problem is that the people that the Yankees trust, Mark Leiter Jr., Tim Hill, have been used just about every day, and if they're not in, they're up. So I don't, you know, and you see sort of they're on the other side of the bell curve right now. So hopefully the starters can go a little longer. But, you know, you're seeing a lot of teams, and you guys did it great. Toronto's doing great. They're making the pitchers really work. And a lot of pitchers, Carlos Rodon the other day talking about, I shouldn't have to go just five innings. I should be in the eighth inning already. But they're fouling pitches off. And the Toronto team, this is a different group to me. Even than what I saw when they were in April, there's something really interesting going on with this offense. And one of the things they're doing is, as Aaron Boone likes to call it, making the pitcher have heavy at-bats and tiring them out. So you have to get these guys up in the middle of the game instead of seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. I think the bullpen is a very important thing for them to fix, too.
Susan, you mentioned Volpe. What do the Yankees want to see from him every day?
According to the Yankees, everything is perfect. You know, this is a new world we're in, Kevin. We don't criticize people. Everyone is wonderful. Uh-huh. Everything is great. We got to tighten it up a little bit. That's as far as anyone will go. And every time you talk about Volpe, and he's not the only one making mistakes out there. Jazz has never played third in himself. And what I'm seeing a lot is that these guys make humongous stops, great, and then throw the ball wherever. Whatever, for whatever reason. But every time, you know, you talk about Volpe, the count, the company line is. He's an elite defender, and he won a Gold Glove his rookie year. Well, okay. But it's, I don't know. It's not going to change. They have hooked their wagon to Anthony Volpe, and it's his third year, and he's not hitting right now. He'll go through stretches where he will hit home runs. He'll end up with, he's got 9. He'll end up with 20 home runs. But the throws are alarming to me a little bit. I know they're trying to play very aggressive. I think Jazz and Volpe haven't gotten together on the left side yet because Jazz is still learning the position, and it's mostly instinct. They want, you know what, he's never going to be Jeter. Nobody's going to be Jeter, and I wish people would let him be Anthony Volpe, and I wish the Yankee organization would not, you know, would not expect that from him because, you know, this is a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's like replacing Mickey Mantle. I mean, you can be really good, but you're not going to be Mickey Mantle.
Yes, great stuff. Last one says, how has Boone handled this year, this team?
People take for granted who he is, and they say he's a company man and he does what he's told. That just isn't true. This is what he does do better than just about anyone I've seen, and because you have to do it in New York, is that he will never hurt his players. He will never say a thing that that will look like he's chiding his players or anything. The most he'll ever say is, you can't do that. You have to make that play. That's as strong as he'll ever do. I think people don't understand what he does behind the scenes. Just because we don't see it doesn't mean it's not going on in the back rooms. To handle this press twice a day on television where the entire front office listens to him all the time, this is a, you know, you can say, I think he's done a great job here. I really do. This is a different world. You can't be Billy Martin anymore. You can't be Dallas Green. I don't know. You can't be Earl Weaver anymore either. And you have to be a different kind of manager. And I think for the market that he's in and what he's trying to do, I think he handles it great.
Yeah.
Susan, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much. It's great to see you. I will say hi to you tonight down at
the ballpark.
Yeah,
you're the
best. That's great. Great to always be with you guys.
Thanks, Susan. See you later.
Susan Waldman. The Yankees, and
she's great.
She's the best.
She's right.
Yeah,
you know, you go Booty. On. You know, I don't go. It's rare that I go on Instagram and Twitter. Well, is that what it's called? Twitter.
I don't even know.
I asked somebody.
It's called X now.
Whatever it's called. That I go on, but I like going on when the Yankees lose. Just to listen, just to read.
Yeah.
Just to feel the vibe. They destroy. I'm talking Volpe and Booney. Man,
you know what though?
It is something else, and that's why I wanted to ask about Boone.
There's a difference between. I've always found there's a difference between the way the Yankees destroy their people, the Yankees fans destroy their people, and the Red Sox fans destroy their. But the Red Sox fans, it's way more toxic than the Yankees. Yankees appointed, it's critical, but man, Red Sox is scary, scary, weird, warped compared to.
I don't know.
To the Yankees. Oh, yeah. Not even close. Not even close. Interesting hearing Susan talk about Aaron Boone, though, because I've detected a couple of times that I've been down, you know, in the dugout listening to Aaron. And I've always told people this Joe Torre's secret was if I keep the writers in the dugout long enough and answer all their questions, they're going to stay away from my players. And they're going to stay away from the clubhouse. And Joe admitted that was part of the... I mean, one of the reasons everybody loved Joe Torre is Joe Torre had to be loved by the media because that meant that everybody stayed away from his players.
Yeah.
Aaron does...
Enough.
...a better job at that than people give him credit for. You can't... He doesn't have what I would call the bedside manner of Joe Torre. Like, Joe Torre knew when to tell a joke. He knew when to... look up in the sky and, you know, man, this reminds me of the day, you know. And if you gave Joe Torre an opportunity to go in a tangent, he would very comfortably take it in a tangent. Mm. And he was entertaining. He was the best pregame manager of a media session I have ever seen. He'd give you half an hour if he had to give you half an hour. Boone, it's a different time now, but Aaron does as good a job as anybody at doing that. And I think, you know, for that reason, I don't think quite often. I don't think he gets the credit.
He deserves. When they lose, they should never lose. You know, when they're winning, they're not winning enough.
Yeah.
It's how they win, how they look when they win, how they look when they lose. You know, Torrey didn't have Judge. That's a whole different animal. You're trying to keep the media away from Judge. You know, how do you get Judge pitches to hit?
But, you know,
that was the sort of the theme I was reading last night is, they moved around the order a little bit, lefty-righty, that kind of thing. So they're trying to make it a little tougher for John to pitch around and walk Judge. It's a thing. Like, I'm not disagreeing with you about the Red Sox and how they attack their manager and their players, but man alive.
Yeah, there's
trying to maneuver around being the manager for the New York Yankees. Holy moly!
There's a difference. There's a difference too, though, because the Red Sox went a long time without winning. Then they won multiple World Series quickly. Their fans went from having no expectations to having over expectations.
Yeah,
Yankees fans always have had over expectations.
I've often said this to you: how Vladdy would handle New York.
You know what? Here's the thing. I don't think Vladdy would care because I don't think Vladdy cares.
See, I couldn't disagree more.
I don't think Vladdy
the
cares.
The times that I've talked, I think he does care a lot. I think he cares too much.
I don't think Vladdy. I just don't think it'd be an issue with him. I don't think it would be an issue with him in New York. It's hard. You know what it is? It's harder on pitchers in New York than it is position players. The people who've had the hardest time dealing with stuff in New York almost always.
Eighth and ninth inning guys, everyday guys, you drop $500 million on. It's a little different. It's like Judge says he's supposed to never slump. Yeah. Ever.
The other thing that is different though too is reporters spend less time in the clubhouse now than they used to. I used to spend a lot of time in the clubhouse.
You
don't do that anymore. You don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
John, do we have time to do John Schneider's media veil? All right. Well, this was John Schneider talking to the media ahead of tonight's game.
Available off the bench.
Feeling better today. I think he's out here now taking some ground balls. Going to hit in the cage afterwards and see how he feels, but definitely better than yesterday, which is good. And want to just be sure, hopefully he's available off the bench yet, and just want to be sure, you know, he's all right getting back on his feet after a couple days off.
It's nice to hear that Jimmy Garcia is back in the bullpen. First of all, what kind of, what kind of a boost would this be for your bullpen?
Yeah, it's a immediate high leverage arm, which is nice, and he's been so damn good over his career and his time here. As a manager, you love having a guy like that because he's reliable, he trusts his stuff, and you like him against anybody. So nice to have him back against this lineup for sure. And he's just good to have in the pen too with the guys down there. You know, whenever you get a guy, 10-year vet, with electric stuff, it's just a very comforting feeling having him down there.
We've seen Mason be effective, but he had been having a rough time. What did you want him to work on?
First time up in the big leagues, and Flew did an outstanding job for us, and we're confident that he will, you know, again at some point. Like any young guy, I think going through it a little bit, teams start to make adjustments, and, you know, you have to adjust back. I don't think that it's anything stuff-wise with Mace. It's more so getting ahead of hitters and kind of limiting some unnecessary base runners. And when he was going really good, that's what he was doing, and confident that he'll get back to that. So he's an accountable, honest guy, and I think that he understands this is probably best for him and best for us right now, and knows that he'll be part of this going forward.
George said something interesting. He credits his success to kind of learning to accept failure and learning to accept the ups and downs. Have you seen that kind of growth from him?
Absolutely, yeah. It's funny, man. For a guy that's been through a lot, been through basically everything the game has to offer, you still go through tough times. And I think last year was a tough year for him, minus probably about 5 or 6 weeks. And you're always evolving, always learning. As long as you're in this game, if you're not, it's gonna fly right by you. And George, you know, we've had some great conversations going back to the off season, spring training, this season. I've used the term he feels a little bit more free this year, which is weird for a veteran guy. but I think not letting things snowball. You know, he's really, really convicted with a plan every single night, and he's going out and trying to executing it, and he's done a really good job of doing that. Big day yesterday, obviously, for a lot of different reasons. On Canada Day, you know, you can kind of feel the electricity, and really cool to have him be the guy kind of front and center. But I think the biggest difference with Georgie this year is being okay with taking some chances and being okay with not trying to be the guy every single night. And he's been great.
I thought I was going to out you guys by talking about that. He was actually asked about it yesterday. Interesting that he said, listen, John, I also do other things than just hit. So when he comes and says to you, I really should be known as the OP instead of the DH,
right.
What are you thinking?
For one, I laughed. I loved it. So for those that don't know, OP means offensive player. It kind of goes hand in hand with what we've been talking about for the past month or so, about running the bases, doing things to help us win rather than just swinging the bat. So we've kind of chuckled about it. We've kind of, you know, leaned into it a little bit, and it's rubbed off on people. You know, I think that it's when a veteran guy kind of says something, people listen, and whether it's in a joking manner or a serious manner, it resonates. So offensive player, you know, you have to do more than just hit, and there's more ways to generate offense rather than just swinging the bat. And I think over the past month, our guys have realized that. I've been really, really impressed and proud with the improvements we've made from April to May to June on the bases. And, you know, I think Georgie can probably take the trademark of OP rather than me. And, you know, it's a cool little inside joke.
Can I spin off that?
Yeah.
You know, capturing lightning in a bottle, hot bats you have, you just look swinging-wise and so on. I mean, I'm sure you'd like to put that in a bottle and keep it going in the game, but what can a coaching staff do to keep that momentum?
You let the players play, for one. And I think when you have a pretty sound foundation of how we play, it's easy to do that. Little things to highlight. Two nights ago, it's putting the ball in play and running the bases accordingly and playing good defense. Last night, it's hitting home runs. Being able to do it in different ways. Kind of underrated things, you know, in yesterday's game, or Schneid beating out a swinging bunt, the third, Miles walking before Henny's homer, you know. So I think it's sustainable when the expectation is set a certain way and guys kind of buy into it. And hitting is going to kind of come and go. And you're going to face really tough pitchers every single night. So what you can do to sustain scoring runs and giving yourself a chance to win is not just in the batter's box. And I think we do that with just fine.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
That was John Schneider, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. And there you go. Mason Fluharty, we mentioned, sent down today. Jimmy Garcia, indeed a leverage arm available tonight.
Oof.
And you got to think, after not using Jeff Hoffman, you got Hoffman, Garcia. I mean, this is, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to.
We'll say it. We're scared.
The first two games of the series were the games I thought they might be in because of the Yankees pitchers, that
the two
might be in jeopardy. And they won both those games.
Yeah, Warren's real tough on righties.
He is?
The Jays' best hitters are right-handed.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when you're raking, you can name things whatever you want to name them. OP or whatever you want to name them, you name it. It's just funny how that works. Last year, Jahida went to John and said that. John would have rolled his eyes and told him to get out.
Pound sand.
There you go. So it's funny how that works. It's a beauty. Keep doing it.
Yeah. George Springer. Renaissance man, Kevin Barker. Renaissance man.
He has been through some things in his career, right? I mean, some things were, you know, some things that he'd went through early in his career that, you know, occasionally make you wonder. Now he's turned it around. Now we love seeing him at bat. Whoo, boy.
Back to Canada, baby.
Yes.
That's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. A reminder, the back leg line, 416-413-3959. Questions, comments for us and for John Schneider. He'll join us on Friday. We'll be doing Blue Jays Talk tonight. Enjoy the rest of your day.